when you're talking about indoor agriculture, you know, compared to say multifamily, the cap rates are generally going to be higher. There are of course risk and it is new, but from a longer term perspective, you have a chance to make some higher returns. The second part is sort of sustainability and to improve the food systems.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm super excited to bring our guest, Chris Rawley, on. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So everyone, Chris has a very interesting niche in the syndication space. He's focused on agriculture. So Chris Rawley, Harvest Returns CEO and founder, currently a captain in the U.S. Navy Reserve, serving as the Reserve Chief of Staff for the United States 6th Fleet, has invested in real estate and income-producing agriculture for nearly two decades. While visiting a farm investment in Central America, Rawley conceived the idea of building a crowdfunding platform to streamline agricultural investment. Awesome. So Chris, why don't you take us back in time and give us some color into your investing journey and what drew you into the agricultural space, whether you had any other sorts of investing experience like with multifamily, et cetera.
Great question. So I kind of had a long investing route to get to where I am now. I started out, as a lot of people in real estate start out, with like a single family home, you know, did variations of that, fix and flip and things like that, and then saw the economies of scale of building into getting into multifamily and mixed use and land development, things like that. And I've kind of tried all of those different niches and did pretty well at them. After around 2008, you know, we had the big real estate cycle there and the economic crisis, I started looking at other ways to diversify my portfolio. And one of the things that kind of crossed my viewpoint was agriculture. So, you know, there's a couple of reasons for that. One is because I sort of moved out near a lot of farms and ranches and saw, you know, from an urban area to a more rural area and saw, hey, there's a lot of people making a lot of money growing things. And it's an important industry because it's something that touches every single person on earth. We, just like in real estate, everybody has to have a place to live. Everyone has to eat. And the other aspect of that was travel. I've traveled all over the world pretty extensively in the Navy and otherwise, and saw a lot of different countries where people were much more reliant on their food system because they had to be. They didn't have Costco's and grocery stores full of produce of, you know, year-round varieties, always fresh, that's imported from across the world like we do. They had to grow things in their yards or buy it very locally at a farmer's market. And because of that, I decided I wanted to invest in a farm and farming. And it turns out at that time, this is 2014, 15, 16, there weren't a lot of ways to do that. There weren't very many mechanisms. There were some things like farmland REITs that were basically like buying a stock and, you know, semi-correlated with the stock market. And I didn't necessarily like that because I wanted to diversify outside of the stock market. So decided to, it was a challenge to invest in a farm without a lot of capital and a lot of know-how and connections. And so I took a leap and decided to start a company that allowed people to invest in farms. And farmers come to us and want to raise capital. And what we do is we put our pool of investors against that and help them put together offerings that allow people to come in. And they're structured very similar to like you might see with a multifamily deal. And that was 2016. We've been going since then.
Awesome. Well, that's a fascinating turn of events. I mean, you started like a lot of us do with single family fix and flips. And then, you know, 2008 was obviously a huge shakeup for so many people in real estate, especially single family. I want to kind of really dig into the sort of risks of the, because I mean, I'm very focused on like investing on a risk adjusted basis. And I'm mm-hmm. very unfamiliar with the risks associated with any sort of agricultural deal. Would you talk about some of those?
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you asked that because people, before you invest in anything, you really need to understand the risk, what they are. And when you're working with an outside sponsor, you need to know that they understand what their own risks are and what they're doing to mitigate them. So with agriculture specifically, you know, there are some market-based risk associated with commodity prices. So, you know, just like rents go up and down in real estate and valuations go up and down in real estate, in agriculture, you do have land values that primarily go up. You know, they primarily tend to increase just like within real estate, but the commodity prices that you're growing can fluctuate. So something like corn or wheat are traded on big commodity markets and they fluctuate for a number of reasons. Something more for example, we do grass-fed livestock, that fluctuates less because it's more of a premium sort of product and there's more that goes into its production. So it's not as vulnerable to commodity swings. There's natural risk, like, you know, weather, droughts, depending on what you're growing. There are pests and disease that impact animals and plants-based agriculture that can be mitigated with the proper operators and taking the right precautions against those. And, you know, things like insurance, just like you have, there's crop insurance for some crops, not all, some operates kinds of operations in agriculture, but not all, that can help mitigate those risks.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we could dive into each of those, but I want to see if you can give us like an example agricultural deal, like maybe one of your more recent deals that you invested in, just give us an overview so the listeners can understand what one of these deals might look like in the future.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do is a lot of grass-fed products. We've done both debt and equity. So we recently completed a raise for a lamb, Dorper lamb operation based here in Texas. And Dorper lamb is it's kind of a specialty type of product where it's a really lean meat. It's growing in popularity in the United States. It's originally a South African breed. And this was an operation that had been around for several years, but they wanted to vertically integrate. So they wanted to put into, you know, most times when a farmer produces something, they're only making like a few cents on a dollar of every piece of food that's sold or every. So a lot of farmers are looking at better ways to integrate. So they're taking more profitability out of what they're raising. So in this case, it was actually Covemark Capra they are growing these Dorper lambs. They've got a network of ranchers. They want to bring more of that in-house. They want to produce more or process more of what they produce. And then they're selling it directly to places like Whole Foods. So they're basically going to own the entire supply chain for this Dorper lamb and have, you know, one of the largest sources. So our investors came in and are able to come into that company and basically take a piece of the operating company. And they will be able to exit at some point in several years based on that company having the capital to buy them out of the investment, essentially.
Okay. Can you explain a little bit about how they're going to kind of take over this niche?
Yeah. And this particular investment, you know, they're just growing. They've got a very professional team, both on the production side, which, you know, network of ranchers who have been raising these sheep for decades, to a very sophisticated sales and marketing team who's able to produce sell in outlets like Whole Foods and HEB markets here in Texas, and then expand that regionally and produce value-added products. Like they're making lamb tamales, which I've tasted and they're excellent. So they're not just selling the meat, but they're putting, you know, a marketing power behind that to get higher valuations out of what they're selling and therefore produce eventually a higher valuation for the company.
Okay. Awesome. And so is this on a similar time frame that you would see a typical syndication on? What's the like time frame?
Yeah, because, you know, my real estate investing background, I try to put together these offerings that are similar sort of exits. So 3 to 7 years, which is not very typical in agriculture, because most agriculture investments thus far have been like, hey, you go out and buy a piece of land and you own it for 10 years or 20 years. And then most land in the United States is farmland is family owned and it's owned by farmers. And they don't necessarily farm it. They rent it to people who actually operate it. A lot of multi-generation farm families aren't actually farmers anymore. They're landlords. And so one of the things we like to do is help fund and capitalize more people who are actually own the operation they're farming on. And so structuring those exits, whether it's a cash out refinance or targeted rate of return based on cash flows or some sort of merger and acquisitions liquidity event where they're going to sell the business after a certain time period, target those. We like multiple exits because that's one of those ways to reduce risk.
For sure. So would you say, Chris, that you're one of the sort of pioneers in this sort of agricultural syndication space, or is it a growing space?
It's definitely growing. I guess we are pioneers. We're one of the first equity crowdfunding companies to be doing agriculture investing. There's a few others, and we're all kind of each in our own niche, and those are all great companies. And we have, you know, we know each other, and because we work in the same space. And then there's other ways, you know, a lot of institutional investors are in this space, which is great, because that's, you know, big pension funds and university endowments and hundreds of millions of dollars. Our deals are more focused on that smaller operator. You know, just like you'll see in commercial real estate, you've got some really, really big names, but you've also got mom and pop or smaller syndicators that are doing their thing, and there's a niche for everybody. And we like to be, you know, help those sort of small to mid-sized farmers grow and expand their operations.
Okay, awesome. So I know you're also interested in vertical farming. Like we've talked about growing indoors. Can you tell me what your sort of exposure to that, and if you're doing investments with that, and just about why that's interesting in general?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, so the agriculture in the United States and really all over the world is undergoing a transformation right now. And there's a technology piece that's for an industry that hasn't really changed a whole lot in 40 or 50 years. It went through in the 1940s and 50s. We industrialized. We started agriculture expanded in scale, and you know, conventional agriculture, talking like row crops, soy, that sort of thing, and big fruits and vegetables. Primarily in places like California, has grown to such a scale that it's very efficient. At the same time, we import a lot of fruits and vegetables so they can be sold year round, because that's what the American consumer demands. But what we're seeing now is almost a reverse of that. We're seeing more fragmented types of growing because consumers are demanding that now. People like to eat food that's grown locally. And there's a lot of reasons for that. It's less food miles to transport food that's grown within, you know, say 100 miles of your house than shipping it across the country from Salinas Valley, California out to the East Coast. So there's some, you know, savings, reduced carbon emissions and things like that with the transportation, you know, cost and emissions. But there's also the ability to grow produce year round in places it wouldn't normally grow. And so what indoor agriculture does is it mitigates a lot of the weather risk. It takes out the, you know, things like droughts, because you're a hydroponic system is constantly recirculating the water. It reduces the amount of runoff, so which it creates pollution from some of the conventional agriculture. So you don't have that aspect necessarily, which also reduces the amount of pesticides and herbicides it takes to control pests and weeds and things like that. You really don't have weeds in like a hydroponic farm system. And so at the same time, you're able to produce more crops per year. You're also able to adjust to a changing market. Like you might have a certain soil type in different parts of the country that will grow something very efficiently. But with indoor farming and hydroponics, you can just kind of tweak the system a little bit. And if consumers are demanding a different variety of lettuce or herb or whatever, it's very easy to change out those products and tweak both the fertilizer and the light ratios and things like that to produce whatever the consumers are demanding and to produce it multiple crop cycles a year. So it's the ability to grow a lot more crops, yield a lot more food per square foot than field grown agriculture is pretty tremendous.
Very, very interesting for sure. And you know, one thing that comes to mind, can you touch on sort of how capital intensive it is to build these vertical farms or indoor growing spaces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we work with a couple different sort of indoor or what, you know, the industry term is controlled environment agriculture. And so on one end of the scale are large greenhouses. So this is, you know, around the country, Northeast, Midwest, wherever, where you have, you know, it's basically sunlight that's growing the crops and it's being done on a large scale. It might be, you know, hydroponics. It might be and some other growing medium. And that's one way indoor. On the opposite end of the scale are, and so obviously if you think about building a big greenhouse with pumps and water and systems and things like that, is very capital intensive up front. But once you develop that, just like developing a building, an office building or apartment building, costs a lot of money, but then it's just like throwing off cash as long as it's full, right? So in the case of a large greenhouse, yeah, CapEx up front, but then once you're up and growing, the operating costs aren't that extensive. You're constantly replanting. And as long as you're able to sell that, those products, those, you know, the greens or whatever you're producing, it's just throwing off cash flow at that point. So on the other end of the scale is smaller vertical farms. These are usually in urban, suburban areas. They're generally have LED lighting, so they consume some electricity, but they're smaller scale. They're typically growing higher end products like microgreens or herbs or strawberries or things like that that are sold locally to either, you know, restaurants or some groceries and things like that, that want that kind of produce where the consumers are able to pay kind of a higher premium than you might get with sort of bulk goods. So those two can be capital intensive because there's growing systems, there's pumps, there's lighting systems. There's control systems that control the whole thing and automate the whole process for the most part. But there's also, and you know, there's labor costs and things like that involved in all of these operations once you're up and going. But on a smaller scale, you're able to sell those higher end products, which kind of makes up for it.
Awesome. Where have you invested, geographically speaking, in these indoor farming environments? And have you done the tall ones or the smaller ones so far?
Yeah. So we've been in two large scale greenhouse operations. One of them is fully up and running. That we've had that one for about 3 years now, hoping to get an exit soon. That's in Kentucky. We just recently invested in a large scale greenhouse operation in Vermont in New Hampshire that's still being developed. And then on the smaller indoor farms, we've got one in Dallas, which is up and operating, producing, one in Birmingham, Alabama, which is about to have its grand opening, another in Omaha, Nebraska. Mm-hmm. That's tied to a restaurant, which we're really excited about. That's an opportunity zone in our opportunity zone fund. And that one is opening later this summer. So yeah, a lot of geographic variety. And when, you know, one of the things, it's like any kind of investing, we like to reduce risk by diversifying. And in this asset class, you can diversify geographically, just like you might, you know, have a portfolio of multifamilies across a couple of different cities.
Yeah. Well, that's quite a number of indoor investments. And just so I can understand, are these tall ones, or are they like larger greenhouses?
They're the two of them are the big scale greenhouses where we were, you know, part of the whole capital stack where they had debt and other equity investors. And we were, you know, one of the equity investors. And then the smaller scale ones are, you know, just in like office, not office buildings, but like industrial kind of buildings where they're, you know, might have 12 foot ceiling, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's very, very cool. I remember hearing about vertical farms and more indoor growing like back 10 or 15 years ago. And it's cool to see how far it's come. And it's, you know, it seems like it has the ability to really solve a lot of food systems issues in our country, you know? So that's very exciting to hear about. I wanted to touch on something that you mentioned, which is like the viability of these farm invest or these compared to sort of like a multifamily, like how would mm-hmm. Because, you know, a lot of our investors are so far looking at multifamily and other mm-hmm. types of real estate. Mm-hmm. So for the beginner investor, how would you recommend they compare kind of like an investment in agriculture versus, you know, what they might typically be seeing in the real estate space?
Yeah. So it is kind of a hard comparison. So there are things like markets that might be a sort of apples to apples where, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, thriving market for real estate, thriving economy, lots of reasons for that. Business-friendly environment, population that's increasingly wealthy, that sort of thing. So an indoor farm there has a better chance than probably an indoor farm in a market that's not doing as well. As far as, you know, who are they selling to? You know, are they selling to high-end restaurants? Are they selling to farmers markets or some combination? That's all important things to answer. That in evaluating, it's a lot like, you know, real estate, who's your sponsor? So, you know, who's this operator that's putting together this offering? Have they ever operated a multifamily on a scale? Same thing with indoor farming. It's definitely a newer niche. You're seeing a lot more of it. You're seeing some really big money come in on a large scale, like companies like AppHarvest are now like $1 billion plus valuations, where they're doing these on a very large scale, AeroFarms, a couple others like that. But on a smaller scale, what we'd like to see at some point is, you know, somebody figuring out, somebody getting so good at this that they're able to either franchise model it or be, you know, be the McDonald's of indoor farming. Haven't seen it yet, but I think it's coming, and we're hoping to get figure out who that operator is so we can get them in our portfolio.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Okay. And so then just taking a step back, like, why invest in agriculture?
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, it's compelling demographics, just like commercial real estate, where you have, you know, population is going to continue to grow. Population is going to continue to eat. As populations become wealthier, which they generally are around the world, they're going to consume more calories, more protein. So just from a purely a growth industry, it's definitely a growth industry. From a return standpoint, the returns are can be attractive. They can be, you know, equal and or better than commercial real estate when you're talking about indoor agriculture, you know, compared to say multifamily. The cap rates are generally going to be higher. There are, of course, risk, and it is new, but from a longer term perspective, you have a chance to make some higher returns. The second part is sort of sustainability and to improve the food system. So, you know, if you want to help make an impact, positive impact on the environment, then invest. You can invest in farmers who are doing exactly that, who are growing these indoor farm or starting these indoor farms and reducing food waste and reducing, you know, creating nutritious food and filling foods in food deserts. So one of our indoor farms in Dallas, Dragon City Farms, they've started selling their produce into through kind of a community market in South Dallas, kind of an impoverished neighborhood that's generally, you know, has food insecurity in a food desert. And so they're able to do that and create a better food system, better food, healthier food for populations that need it. So there's a lot of those sort of intangible reasons, as well as just, you know, make some money.
For sure. Definitely. And just on that note, would you say that the lamb deal that you were recently talking about from an environmental perspective, you know, I mean, in my mind, like beef and lamb are the most sort of intensive on the environment. And is there any sort of solve for that with this deal that you invested in?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I will call it a misnomer or you know, misunderstanding of the impact of livestock on the environment. So the first thing to realize is we've always had livestock running around the plains of the US. You know, bison were there way before we brought all these cows in and all kinds of other large hoofed animals. So that's nothing new. There is, you know, what is new is sort of the intensity of some of the farming, some of the, you know, the feed yards and places like that have gotten a bad rap. In that they are working on some technologies to make that better. In fact, there's a technology company in our portfolio that's working on that. But specific to the lamb deal, Capra, it's what's called regenerative agriculture. So they, because they're doing grazing and the way they grow these sheep, you know, they're out feeding on grass and their hooves, it's intensive grazing. So they graze through one part of a field and then they move them onto another part and then they give that land time to recover. And it's a very natural process where the carbon is sunk back into the soil and the grasses are able to grow and it's, you know, they're given time to produce healthier soils. Whereas, you know, kind of conventional agriculture, you're using up that soil all the time and it's slowly degrading the topsoil. This is just the opposite. You're building and improving the soil and all the little life forms, bacteria and microorganisms that live in that soil is help the environment.
Okay, cool. And I also wanted to just talk about this opportunity fund that you mentioned, because I think some listeners, it may be a slightly newer concept. Can you tell us about what that is, first of all, for people, and then also what your fund is doing?
Yeah. So, you know, many people kind of heard about opportunity zones. It was legislation that was passed in late 2017. And it's generally a region that are, you know, some of them are urban, some of them are rural, where there's, you know, they meet certain income or the thresholds where it's disadvantaged communities. And so the legislation provides for some tax benefits. And one way to look at it, you know, if your viewers are familiar with like a 1031 exchange where you kind of roll that in, instead of that with an opportunity zone, if you have a capital gains from selling a building, selling some stock, selling a business, you're able to roll that into an opportunity zone fund. You get a step up in basis. You get to defer your capital gains till December 31st, 2026. And there's talk about changing some of these timelines and some of these things to make it more attractive. And then if you stay in the fund for 10 years, you don't have to pay any capital gains. So basically, if you have $100,000, you know, investment, and then you make, say, $200,000 on it in capital gains, you pay zero tax at the end of those 10 years. So in our fund, we're specialized in agriculture, and we're really one of the only opportunity zone funds. Most of them are in things like, you know, multifamily or hotels or things like that. We're one of the only ones that's focused on agriculture.
Very interesting. Awesome. Well, I'm sure we could talk for a lot longer, Chris, but let's save the rest of the conversation for another time. Thank you so much for enlightening us on agriculture and, you know, the benefits of it and why it's relevant and maybe something for our listeners to look into. Why don't you give the listeners a way to get a hold of you and anything else that you'd like to share with them?
Sure. You know, best way to get a hold of us is harvestreturns.com. We're also on social media, but on the website, we have a blog, and it's kind of a, you know, before you invest in something, you need to learn about it. And because agriculture is pretty new, we spend a lot of time trying to educate our investors on, you know, why they should invest in agriculture, different types of agriculture, different ways the offerings make you money. And so just visit us at Harvest Returns.
Yeah, that's awesome. I definitely hope you guys do that. I had a good friend who told me about this exact lamb deal that you're talking about. And it was just so foreign to me that I didn't really give it a second thought. But if I maybe took the time to learn about it, I might find some very compelling things about it. And so thanks so much for that. And I hope you all take some time to learn about agriculture. All right, Chris, thanks so much. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.